U.S. History Textbook. Text available for free at cnx.org. Audio recording available for free at educateforfree.com. Summary 9.1. Early Industrialization in the Northeast. Industrialization led to radical changes in American life. New industrial towns dotted the landscape of the Northeast. The mills provided many young women an opportunity to experience a new and liberating life, and these workers relished their new freedom. Workers also gained a greater appreciation of the value of their work, and in some instances began to question the basic fairness of the new industrial order. The world of work had been fundamentally reorganized. 9.2. A Vibrant Capitalist Republic. The selling of the public domain was one of the key features of the early 19th century in the United States. Thousands rushed west to take part in the bounty. In the wild frenzy of land purchases and speculation in land, state banks advanced risky loans and created unstable paper money not backed by gold or silver, ultimately leading to the Panic of 1819. The ensuing economic depression was the first in U.S. history. Recovery came in the 1820s, followed by a period of robust growth. In this age of entrepreneurship, in which those who invested their money wisely in land, business ventures, or technological improvements reaped vast profits, inventors produced new wonders that transformed American life. 9.3. On the Move, the Transportation Revolution. A transportation infrastructure rapidly took shape in the 1800s as American investors and the government began building roads, turnpikes, canals, and railroads. The time required to travel shrank vastly, and people marveled at their ability to conquer great distances, enhancing their sense of steady advance of progress. The transportation revolution also made it possible to ship agricultural and manufactured goods throughout the country and enabled rural people to travel to towns and cities for employment opportunities. 9.4. A New Social Order. Class divisions. The creation of distinctive classes in the North drove striking new cultural developments. Even among the wealthy elites, Northern business families, who had mainly inherited their money, distanced themselves from the newly wealthy manufacturing leaders. Regardless of how they had earned their money, however, the elite lived and socialized apart from members of the growing middle class. The middle class valued work, consumption, and education and dedicated their energies to maintaining or advancing their social status. Wage workers formed their own society in industrial cities and mill villages. The lack of money and long working hours effectively prevented the working class from consuming the fruits of their labor, educating their children, or advancing up the economic ladder. 10.1. A New Political Style, from John Quincy Adams to Andrew Jackson. The early 1800s saw an age of deference give way to universal manhood suffrage and a new type of political organization based on loyalty to the party. The election of 1824 was a fight among Democratic Republicans that ended up pitting Southerner Andrew Jackson against Northerner John Quincy Adams. When Adams won through political negotiations in the House of Representatives, Jackson's supporters derided the election as a corrupt bargain. The tariff of 1828 further stirred Southern sentiment, this time against a perceived bias in the federal government towards Northeastern manufacturers. At the same time, the tariff stirred deeper fears that the federal government might take steps that could undermine the system of slavery. 10.2. The Rise of American Democracy. The Democratic Republicans' corrupt bargain that brought John Quincy Adams and Henry Clay to office in 1824 also helped to push them out of office in 1828. Jackson used it to highlight the cronyism of Washington politics. Supporters presented him as a true man of the people fighting against the elitism of Clay and Adams. Jackson rode a wave of populist fervor all the way to the White House, ushering in the ascendancy of a new political party, the Democrats. Although Jackson ran on a platform of clearing the corruption out of Washington, he rewarded his own loyal followers with plum government jobs, thus continuing and intensifying the cycle of favoritism and corruption. 10.3. The Nullification Crisis and the Bank War. Andrew Jackson's election in 1832 signaled the rise of the Democratic Party and a new style of American politics. Jackson understood the views of the majority, and he skillfully used the popular will to his advantage. He adroitly navigated through the nullification crisis and made headlines with what his supporters viewed as his righteous war against the bastion of money, power, and entrenched insider interests, the Second Bank of the United States. His actions, however, stimulated opponents to fashion an opposition party, the Whigs. 10.4. Indian Removal. Popular culture in the age of Jackson emphasized the savagery of the native peoples and shaped domestic policy. Popular animosity found expression in the Indian Removal Act. Even the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in favor of the Cherokee in Georgia offered no protection against the forced removal of the five civilized tribes from the Southeast, mandated by the 1830 Indian Removal Act and carried out by the U.S. military. 10.5. The Tyranny and Triumph of the Majority. American culture of the 1830s reflected the rise of democracy. The majority exercised a new type of power that went well beyond politics, leading Alexis de Tocqueville to write about the tyranny of the majority. Very quickly, politicians among the Whigs and Democrats learned to master the magic of many by presenting candidates and policies that catered to the will of the majority. In the 1840 Log Cabin Campaign, both sides engaged in new Democratic electioneering. The uninhibited expressions during the campaign inaugurated a new political style. 11.1. Lewis and Clark. In 1803, Thomas Jefferson appointed Meriwether Lewis to organize an expedition into the Louisiana Territory to explore and map the area, but also to find an all-water route from the Missouri River to the Pacific coast. The Louisiana Purchase and the journey of Lewis and Clark's Corps of Discovery captured the imagination of many who dedicated themselves to the economic exploitation of the Western lands and the expansion of American influence and power. In the South, the Adams-Onis Treaty legally secured Florida for the United States, though it did nothing to end the resistance of the Seminoles against American expansionism. At the same time, the treaty frustrated those Americans who considered Texas a part of the Louisiana Purchase. Taking matters into their own hands, some American settlers tried to take Texas by force. 11.2. The Missouri Crisis. The Missouri Crisis created a division over slavery that profoundly and ominously shaped sectional identities and rivalries as never before. Conflict over the uneasy balance between slave and free states in Congress came to a head when Missouri petitioned to join the Union as a slave state in 1819, and the debate broadened from simple issues of representation to a critique of the morality of slavery. The debates also raised the specter of disunion and civil war, leading many, including Thomas Jefferson, to fear for the future of the Republic. Under the Missouri Compromise, Missouri and Maine entered the Union at the same time. Maine is a free state, Missouri is a slave state, and a line was drawn across the remainder of the Louisiana Territory, north of which slavery was forbidden. 11.3. Independence for Texas. The establishment of the Lone Star Republic formed a new chapter in the history of U.S. westward expansion. In contrast to the addition of the Louisiana Territory through diplomacy with France, Americans in Texas employed violence against Mexico to achieve their goals. Orchestrated largely by slaveholders, the acquisition of Texas appeared the next logical step in creating an American empire that included slavery. Nonetheless, with the Missouri Crisis in mind, the United States refused the Texans' request to enter the United States as a slave state in 1836. Instead, Texas formed an independent republic where slavery was legal, but American settlers there continued to press for more land. The strained relationship between expansionists in Texas and Mexico in the early 1840s hinted of things to come. 11.4. The Mexican-American War, 1846-1848. President James K. Polk's administration was a period of intensive expansion for the United States. After overseeing the final details regarding the annexation of Texas from Mexico, Polk negotiated a peaceful settlement with Great Britain regarding ownership of the Oregon Country, which brought the United States what are now the states of Washington and Oregon. The acquisition of additional lands from Mexico, a country many in the United States perceived as weak and inferior, was not so bloodless. The Mexican Cession added nearly half of Mexico's territory to the United States, including New Mexico and California, and established the U.S.-Mexico border at the Rio Grande. The California Gold Rush rapidly expanded the population of the new territory, but also prompted concerns over immigration, especially from China. 11.5. Free soil or slave? The dilemma of the West. The acquisition of land from Mexico in 1848 reawakened debates regarding slavery. The suggestion that slavery be barred from the Mexican cession caused rancorous debate between North and South and split the Democratic Party when many Northern members left to create the Free Soil Party. Although the Compromise of 1850 resolved the question of whether slavery would be allowed in the new territories, the solution pleased no one. The peace brought by the compromise was short-lived, and the debate over slavery continued. 12.1. The economics of cotton. In the years before the Civil War, the South produced the bulk of the world's supply of cotton. The Mississippi River Valley slave states became the epicenter of cotton production, an area of frantic economic activity where the landscape changed dramatically as land was transformed from pine woods and swamps into cotton fields. Cotton's profitability relied on the institution of slavery, which generated the product that fueled cotton mill profits in the North. When the international slave trade was outlawed in 1808, the domestic slave trade exploded, providing economic opportunities for whites involved in many aspects of the trade and increasing the possibility of slaves' dislocation and separation from kin and friends. Although the larger American and Atlantic markets relied on Southern cotton in this era, the South depended on these other markets for food, manufactured goods, and loans. Thus, the market revolution transformed the South, just as it had other regions. 12.2. African Americans in the antebellum United States. Slave labor in the antebellum South generated great wealth for plantation owners. Slaves, in contrast, endured daily traumas as the human property of masters. Slaves resisted their condition in a variety of ways, and many found some solace in Christianity and the communities they created in the slave quarters. While some free blacks achieved economic prosperity and even became slaveholders themselves, the vast majority found themselves restricted by the same white supremacist assumptions upon which the institution of slavery was based. 12.3. Wealth and culture in the South. Although a small white elite owned the vast majority of slaves in the South, and most other whites could only aspire to be slaveholders, wealth, and status, slavery shaped the social life of all white Southerners in profound ways. Southern culture valued a behavioral code in which men's honor, based on the domination of others and the protection of Southern white womanhood, stood as the highest good. Slavery also decreased class tensions, binding whites together on the basis of race, despite their inequalities of wealth. Several defenses of slavery were prevalent in the antebellum era, including Calhoun's argument that the South's concurrent majority could overrule federal legislation deemed hostile to Southern interests. The notion that slaveholders' care of their chattel made slaves better off than wage workers in the North, and the profoundly racist ideas underlying polygynism. 12.4. The filibuster and the quest for new slave states. The decade of the 1850s witnessed various schemes to expand the American empire of slavery. The Ostend Manifesto articulated the right of the United States to forcefully seize Cuba if Spain would not sell it, while filibuster expeditions attempted to annex new slave states without the benefit of governmental approval. Those who pursued the goal of expanding American slavery believed they embodied the true spirit of white racial superiority. 13.1. An awakening of religion and individualism. Evangelical Protestantism pervaded American culture in the antebellum era and fueled a belief in the possibility of changing society for the better. Leaders of the Second Great Awakening, like Charles G. Finney, urged listeners to take charge of their own salvation. The religious message dovetailed with the new economic possibilities created by the market and industrial revolution, making the Protestantism of the Second Great Awakening, with its emphasis on individual spiritual success, a reflection of the individualistic capitalist spirit of the age. Transcendentalists took a different approach, but like their religiously oriented brethren, they too looked to create a better existence. These authors, most notably Emerson, identified a major tension in American life between the effort to be part of the Democratic majority and the need to remain true to oneself as an individual. 13.2, antebellum communal experiments. Reformers who engaged in communal experiments aimed to recast economic and social relationships by introducing innovations designed to create a more stable and equitable society. Their ideas found many expressions from early socialist experiments such as the Fourierists and the Owenites to dreams of the New England intellectual elite such as Brook Farm. The Second Great Awakening also prompted many religious utopias like those of the Rapites and Shakers. By any measure, the Mormons emerged as the most successful of these. 13.3, reforms to human health. Reformers targeted vices that corrupted the human body and society, the individual and the national soul. For many, alcohol appeared to be the most destructive and widespread. Indeed, in the years before the Civil War, the United States appeared to be a republic of drunkenness to many. To combat this national substance abuse problem, reformers created a host of temperance organizations that first targeted the middle and upper classes and then the working classes. Thanks to Sylvester Graham and other health reformers, exercise and fresh air combined with a good diet became fashionable. Phrenologists focused on revealing the secrets of the mind and personality. In a fast-paced world, phrenology offered the possibility of knowing different human characteristics. 13.4, addressing slavery. Contrasting proposals were put forth to deal with slavery. Reformers in the antebellum United States addressed the thorny issue of slavery through contrasting proposals that offered profoundly different solutions to the dilemma of the institution. Many leading American statesmen, including slaveholders, favored colonialization, relocating American blacks to Africa, which abolitionists scorned. Slave rebellions sought the end of the institution through its violent overthrow, a tactic that horrified many in the North and the South. Abolitionists, especially those who followed William Lloyd Garrison, provoked equally strong reactions by envisioning a new United States without slavery, where blacks and whites stood on equal footing. Opponents saw abolition as the worst possible reform, a threat to all order and decency. Slaveholders, in particular, saw slavery as a positive aspect of American society, one that reformed the lives of slaves by exposing them to civilization and religion. 13.5, women's rights. The spirit of religious awakening and reform in the antebellum era impacted women's lives by allowing them to think about their lives and their society in new and empowering ways. Of all the various antebellum reforms, however, abolition played a significant role in generating the early feminist movement in the United States. Although this early phase of American feminism did not lead to political rights for women, it began the long process of overcoming gender inequalities in the Republic. 14.1, the Compromise of 1850. The difficult process of reaching a compromise on slavery in 1850 exposed the sectional fault lines in the United States. After several months of rancorous debate, Congress passed five laws, known collectively as the Compromise of 1850, that people on both sides of the divide hoped had solved the nation's problems. However, many Northerners feared the impact of the Fugitive Slave Act, which made it a crime not only to help slaves escape, but also to fail to help capture them. Many Americans, both black and white, flouted the Fugitive Slave Act by participating in the Underground Railroad, providing safe houses for slaves on the run from the South. Eight Northern states passed personal liberty laws to counteract the effects of the Fugitive Slave Act. 14.2, the Kansas-Nebraska Act and the Republican Party. The application of popular sovereignty to the organization of the Kansas and Nebraska territories ended the sectional truce that had prevailed since the Compromise of 1850. Senator Douglas's Kansas-Nebraska Act opened the door to chaos in Kansas as pro-slavery and free soil forces waged war against each other, and radical abolitionists, notably John Brown, committed themselves to violence to end slavery. The act also upended the second party system of Whigs and Democrats by inspiring the formation of the new Republican Party, committed to arresting the further spread of slavery. Many voters approved its platform in the 1956 presidential election, though the Democrats won the race because they remained a national rather than a sectional political force. 14.3, the Dred Scott decision and sectional strife. The Dred Scott decision of 1857 went well beyond the question of whether or not Dred Scott gained his freedom. Instead, the Supreme Court delivered a far-reaching pronouncement about African Americans in the United States, finding they could never be citizens and that Congress could not interfere with the expansion of slavery into the territories. Republicans erupted in anger at this decision, which rendered their party's central platform unconstitutional. Abraham Lincoln fully articulated the Republican position on the issue of slavery in his 1858 debates with Senator Stephen Douglas. By the end of that year, Lincoln had become a nationally known Republican icon. For the Democrats' part, unity within their party frayed over both the Dred Scott case and the Freeport Doctrine, undermining the Democrats' future ability to retain control of the presidency. 14.4, John Brown and the election of 1860. A new level of animosity and distrust emerged in 1859 in the aftermath of John Brown's raid. The South exploded in rage at the Northern celebration of Brown as a heroic freedom fighter. Fire eaters called openly for disunion. Poisoned relations split the Democrats into Northern and Southern factions, a boon to the Republican candidate Lincoln. His election triggered the downfall of the American experiment with the democracy as Southern states began to leave the Union. 15.1, the origins and outbreak of the Civil War. The election of Abraham Lincoln to the presidency in 1860 proved to be a watershed event. While it did not cause the Civil War, it was the culmination of increasing tensions between the pro-slavery South and the anti-slavery North. Before Lincoln had even taken office, seven deep South states had seceded from the Union to form the CSA, dedicated to maintaining racial slavery and white supremacy. Last-minute efforts to reach a compromise, such as the proposal by Senator Crittenden and the Corwin Amendment, went nowhere. The time for compromise had come to an end. With the Confederate attack on Fort Sumter, the Civil War began. 15.2, early mobilization and war. Many in both the North and South believed that a short, decisive confrontation in 1861 would settle the question of the Confederacy. These expectations did not match reality, however, and the war dragged on into a second year. Both sides mobilized with advantages and disadvantages on each side that led to a rough equilibrium. The losses of battles at Manassas and Fredericksburg, Virginia, kept the North from achieving the speedy victory its generals had hoped for, but the Union did make gains and continued to press forward. While they could not capture the southern capital of Richmond, they were victorious in the Battle of Shiloh and captured New Orleans and Memphis. Thus, the Confederates lost major ground on the Western Front. 15.3, 1863, the changing nature of the war. The year 1863 proved decisive in the Civil War for two major reasons. First, the Union transformed the purpose of the struggle from restoring the Union to ending slavery. While Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation actually succeeded in freeing a few slaves, it made freedom for African Americans a cause of the Union. Second, the tide increasingly turned against the Confederacy. The success of Vicksburg campaign had given the Union control of the Mississippi River, and Lee's defeat at Gettysburg had ended the attempted Confederate invasion of the North. 15.4, the Union triumphant. Having failed to win the support it expected from either Great Britain or France, the Confederacy faced a long war with limited resources and no allies. Lincoln won re-election in 1864 and continued to pursue the Union campaign, not only in the East and West, but also with a drive into the South under the leadership of General Sherman, whose march to the sea through Georgia destroyed everything in its path. Cut off and outnumbered, Confederate General Lee surrendered to Union General Grant on April 9 at Appomattox Courthouse in Virginia. Within days of Lee's surrender, Confederate troops had laid down their arms and the devastating war came to close. 16.1, Restoring the Union. President Lincoln worked to reach his goal of reunifying the nation quickly and proposed a lenient plan to reintegrate the Confederate states. After his murder in 1865, Lincoln's vice president, Andrew Johnson, sought to reconstitute the Union quickly, pardoning Southerners en masse and providing Southern states with a clear path to readmission. By 1866, Johnson announced the end of Reconstruction. Radical Republicans in Congress disagreed, however, and the years ahead would put forth their own plan of Reconstruction. 16.2. Congress and the Remaking of the South, 1865 to 1866. The conflict between President Johnson and the Republican-controlled Congress over the proper steps to be taken with the defeated Confederacy grew in intensity in the years immediately following the Civil War. While the President concluded that all that needed to be done in the South had been done by early 1866, Congress forged ahead to stabilize the defeated Confederacy and extend to freed people citizenship and equality before the law. Congress prevailed over Johnson's vetoes as the friction between the President and the Republicans increased. 16.3. Radical Reconstruction, 1867 to 1872. Though President Johnson declared Reconstruction complete less than a year after the Confederate surrender, members of Congress disagreed. Republicans in Congress began to implement their own plan of bringing law and order to the South through the use of military force and martial law. Radical Republicans who advocated for a more equal society pushed their program forward as well, leading to the ratification of the 15th Amendment, which finally gave blacks the right to vote. The new amendment empowered black voters who made good use of the vote to elect black politicians. It disappointed female suffragists, however, who had labored for years to gain women's right to vote. By the end of 1870, all the southern states under Union military control had satisfied the requirements of Congress and had been readmitted to the Union. 16.4. The Collapse of Reconstruction. The efforts launched by radical Republicans in the late 1860s generated a massive backlash in the South in the 1870s as whites fought against what they considered Negro misrule. Parliamentary terrorist cells emerged, committing countless atrocities in their efforts to redeem the South from black Republican rule. In many cases, these organizations operated as an extension of the Democratic Party. Scandals hobbled the Republican Party, as did a severe economic depression. By 1875, Reconstruction had largely come to an end. The contested presidential election the following year, which was decided in favor of the Republican candidate, and the removal of the federal troops from the South only confirmed the obvious. Reconstruction had failed to achieve its primary objective of creating an interracial democracy that provided equal rights to all citizens. 17.1. The Westward Spirit. While few bold settlers had moved westward before the middle of the 19th century, they were the exception, not the rule. The Great American Desert, as it was called, was considered a vast and empty place, unfit for civilized people. In the 1840s, however, this idea started to change as potential settlers began to learn more from promoters and land developers of the economic opportunities that awaited them in the West. And Americans extolled the belief that it was their manifest destiny, their divine right, to explore and settle the Western territories in the name of the United States. Most settlers in this first wave were white Americans of means. Whether they sought riches in gold, cattle, or farming, or believed it was their duty to spread Protestant ideals to native inhabitants, they headed west in wagon trains along paths such as the Oregon Trail. European immigrants, particularly those from Northern Europe, also made the trip, settling in close-knit ethnic enclaves out of comfort, necessity, and familiarity. African Americans escaping the racism of the South also went west. In all, the newly settled areas were neither a fast track to riches nor a simple expansion into an empty land, but rather a clash of cultures, races, and traditions that defined the emerging new America. 17.2. Homesteading, Dreams and Realities. The concept of manifest destiny and the strong incentives to relocate sent hundreds of thousands of people west across the Mississippi. The vigors of the new way of life presented many challenges and difficulties to homesteaders. The land was dry and barren, and homesteaders lost crops to hail, droughts, insects, swarms, and more. There were few materials with which to build, and early homes were made of mud, which did not stand up to the elements. Money was a constant concern, as the cost of railroad freight was exorbitant and banks were unforgiving on bad harvests. For women, life was difficult in the extreme. Farm wives worked at least 11 hours per day on chores and had limited access to doctors or midwives. Still, they were more independent than their eastern counterparts and worked in partnership with their husbands. As the railroad expanded and better farm equipment became available, by the 1870s, large farms began to succeed through economies of scale. Small farms still struggled to stay afloat, however, leading to rising discontent among the farmers who worked so hard for so little success. 17.3. Making a living in gold and cattle. While homesteading was the backbone of Western expansion, mining and cattle also played significant roles in shaping the West. Much rougher in character and riskier in outcomes than farming, these two opportunities brought forward a different breed of settler than the homesteaders. Many of the long trail cattle riders were Mexican-American or African-American, and most of the men involved in both pursuits were individuals willing to risk what little they had in order to strike it rich. In both the mining and cattle industries, however, individual opportunities slowly died out as resources, both land for grazing and easily accessed precious metals, disappeared. In their place came big business with the infrastructure and investments to make a profit. These businesses built up small towns into thriving cities, and the influx of middle-class families sought to drive out some of the violence and vice that characterized the Western towns. Slowly, but inexorably, the American way of life, as envisioned by the Eastern establishment who initiated and promoted the concept of manifest destiny, was spreading west. 17.4. The loss of American Indian life and culture. The interaction of the American Indians with white settlers during the Western expansion movement was a painful and difficult one. For settlers raised on the notion of manifest destiny and empty lands, the Indians added a terrifying element to what was already a difficult and dangerous new world. For the Indians, the arrival of the settlers meant nothing less than the end of their way of life. Rather than cultural exchange, contact led to the virtual destruction of Indian life and culture. While violent acts broke out on both sides, the greatest atrocities were perpetrated by whites, who had superior weapons and often superior numbers, as well as the support of the U.S. government. The death of the Indian way of life happened as much at the hands of well-intentioned reformers as those who wished to see the Indians exterminated. Individual land ownership, boarding schools, and pleas to renounce Indian gods and culture were all elements of the reformers' efforts. With so much of their life stripped away, it was ever more difficult for Indians to maintain their tribal integrity. 17.5. The impact of expansion on Chinese immigrants and Hispanic citizens. In the 19th century, the Hispanic, Chinese, and white populations of the country collided. Whites moved further west in search of land and riches, bolstered by government subsidies and an inherent and unshakable belief that the land and its benefits existed for their use. In some ways, it was a race to the prize. White Americans believed that they deserved the best lands and economic opportunities the country afforded and did not consider prior claims to be valid. Neither Chinese immigrants nor Hispanic Americans could withstand the assault on their rights by the tide of white settlers. Sheer numbers matched with political backing gave the whites the power they needed to overcome any resistance. Ultimately, both ethnic groups retreated into urban enclaves where their language and traditions could survive.